The last podcast, correlating with the hemodynamic monitoring and circulatory assistive devices, actually focuses on the circulatory devices. Hi, this is Carrie, and this is going to wrap up our discussion related to that PowerPoint. So we're going to start by just talking about why we use circulatory assistive devices. These are devices. The main one we see is an intra-aortic balloon pump. The other ones we're going to focus on are ventricular assistive devices. And these are used to actually decrease the cardiac workload and improve organ perfusion in patients with heart failure when conventional drug therapy is no longer adequate. So the type of device used depends on the extent and nature of the heart problem. So your cardiologist will make that call. So circulatory assistive devices can provide interim support for three types of situations. First, the left, right, or both ventricles require support while recovering from an acute injury. So it could be a heart attack or a coronary artery bypass surgery when there was significant heart damage. That's an example. The second one is the patient must be stabilized before surgical repair of the heart. So if they have had a ruptured septum or we need to beat for the heart initially in order to prepare that patient for surgery, they may use a circulatory assistive device. And the last one is the heart itself has failed and the patient is awaiting a cardiac transplantation. So if the heart is just basically worn out and it can't do its job anymore, they may be placed on one of these devices to buy them time to find a heart transplant. All circulatory assistive devices decrease ventricular workload, increase myocardial perfusion, and augment circulation. The most common one we see used is an IABP, which stands for intra-aortic balloon pump. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit after our case. Let's read through our case. Our ongoing case related to AJ. Despite of aggressive medical care, his heart does not respond to medical treatment. The healthcare provider decides to insert an IABP, intra-aortic balloon pump. What is the purpose of the IABP and how does it work? The next slides are going to talk us through those questions. All circulatory assisted devices decrease ventricular workload, increase myocardial perfusion, and augment circulation. The intra-aortic balloon pump provides temporary circulatory assistance to the sick heart by reducing afterload via reduction in your systolic pressure and augmenting the aortic diastolic pressure, resulting in improved coronary blood flow. So if we understand kind of how this works and what it looks like in the body, if we can picture it, what it's doing should make more sense to us as well. So the IABP consists of a sausage-type shaped balloon, a pump that inflates and deflates the balloon, a control panel for synchronizing the balloon's inflation to the cardiac cycle, and fail-safe features to make sure it's going to work properly. They have built-in safety things. The balloon is inserted percutaneously or surgically into the femoral artery. It is then moved up toward the heart and placed in the descending thoracic aorta, just below the subclavian artery and above the renal arteries. There's a picture of that actually in a few slides that actually shows the placement of it, where it is in relation to the heart. Following placement, an X-ray confirms the position. A pneumatic device fills the balloon with helium at the start of diastole, or immediately after aortic valve closure, and deflates it just before the next systole, or contraction. The ECG is the primary trigger to start the deflation of the upstroke of the R wave and the inflation on the T wave. So the dichrotic notch of the arterial pressure tracing is used to refine the timing. So it's based off the ECG, the IABP monitor reads the EKG tracing and then works accordingly based on the heart's pumping action. The IABP therapy is known as counterpulsation because the timing of the balloon's inflation is opposite to that of the ventricular contraction. Because if the ventricle's contracting, we don't want that balloon in the aorta up, or the blood that the heart is pumping won't get through. So it pulses opposite. So when the heart contracts, the balloon deflates to allow the blood through. And by inflating in the aorta, it then continues to force that blood more forcefully down the aorta into the extremities while the heart is resting. So it's got that counter pulsation that actually helps move the blood through. The IABP assist ratio is 1:1 in the acute phase of treatment. So for every heartbeat, you have a pulsation of the IABP. So you can actually The next slide shows what the machine itself looks like. And during systole, or the contraction, the balloon is deflated. And during diastole or relaxation, the balloon begins to inflate. Okay, this just helps the pressures of the blood flowing through the ventricles. The insertion of the IABP, that's what it talks about next. The balloon is inserted percutaneously through the femoral artery. It's moved toward the heart. After its position has been confirmed, we fill it with helium, and then the monitor correlates with the EKG tracing. The next slide shows a picture of that, actually, and I'm not going to read through that again because you kind of been thinking about that as I've gone through. The next slide shows actually IABP timing and when it goes off. You can look at this slide and just kind of see how you have a contraction and then you have a second hump, which indicates the diastolic augmentation or the IABP. The first one is a 1-to-1. So with every assisted systole and the diastolic augmentation, that is actually, so you have your contraction and then you have your IABP reading. So that the one on the left, your A is a 1-to-1, and the one on the right is 1-to-2. So it doesn't be with every heartbeat. They're probably trying to wean it off. So it's kind of with every other heartbeat that you'll have that. And that's what that picture shows. Complications related to IABP therapy. There can be many things that can happen. It can actually dislodge some plaque that might have already been there. We can have some aortic dissection and compromised distal circulation with the IABP therapy. So thrombus and embolus formation add to the risk of circulatory compromise into the extremity. The pumping action of the IABP can also destroy platelets and cause thrombocytopenia. Peripheral nerve damage can occur, particularly when the cut down is performed for insertion. Again, they try to avoid that if possible. If the balloon itself moves, it can block the left subclavian, renal, or mesenteric arteries, which feed the gut. This can result in weak or absent pulses, decreased urine output, and reduced or decreased bowel sounds. Patients receiving IABP therapy are prone to infection. Again, and we've talked about infection quite frequently with these invasive lines. Mechanical complications from IABP are rare because of all the safety features that they have put into the machine, but they can occur. So improper timing of the balloon inflation can cause an increased afterload, decreased cardiac output, myocardial ischemia, and increased myocardial oxygen demand. If that happens, we need to pick up on those immediately so we can fix them. If the balloon develops a leak, again, the pump itself is going to stop automatically. The catheter is promptly removed to avoid an embolus. Signals of a leak include less effective augmentation, repeated alarms that will go off, or gas loss, so don't just silence the machine. We need to figure out why it's going off. And blood backing up into the catheter. A malfunction of the balloon or console triggers fail-safe alarms and automatically shuts down the unit, which is really nice. They have these built-in safety features. Back to our case. When updating the plan of care for AJ, what interventions will you include related to the IABP? So we need to perform cardiovascular, neurovascular, and hemodynamic assessments every 15 to 60 minutes, depending on the patient's status. The patient with the IABP is relatively immobile, so it's limited to side-lying or supine positions with the head of the bed elevated less than 45 degrees. The patient may also be receiving ventilatory support and will likely have multiple invasive lines that increase the challenge for comfortable positioning. So again, these patients are very sick, and we're going to be monitoring them very closely. The patient may experience sleeplessness and anxiety. I wonder why. That would make sense to us. Adequate sedation, pain relief, skin care, and comfort measures are essential. IABP therapy is weaned as the patient improves. This means that circulatory support provided by the IABP is gradually reduced. Weaning involves reducing the assist rate from 1-to-1 to 1-to-2, like we saw on the picture on that one of the last slides, and assessing the patient's response. So if the hemodynamic parameters remain stable, the ratio can be changed from 1-to-2 to 1-to-3, and then the IABP catheter, they continue to progress that out until we can actually remove the catheter. Pumping is continued until the line is removed, even if the patient is stable. This reduces the risk of thrombus formation around the catheter. So they keep using it until they remove it completely. There's also ventricular assistive devices. Sometimes you'll hear LVAD used if you used to watch Grey's Anatomy, and that may really date me, but they had an episode where they cut the LVAD wires, and which is a left ventricular assistive device wire. And so you sometimes use different abbreviations, but they are meaning the same thing. So the ventricular assistive device, a VAD, provides short and long-term support for the failing heart and allows more mobility than an IABP. So this actually allows them to can get up and walk and move around. So they're inserted into the path of the flowing blood to augment or replace the action of the ventricle. Some VADs are implanted internally, actually in the peritoneum itself, and others are positioned externally. So it all depends on what the cardiologist wants to use. A typical VAD shunts blood from the left atrium or ventricle to the device and then to the aorta. Some VADs provide right, left, or even biventricular support, depending on what is needed. So a typical VAD shunts blood from the left atrium or ventricle to the device and then to the aorta. And actually, if you look, there's a picture on the next slide that actually shows a biventricular assistive device and what that actually can look like. So again, if it's biventricular, they're usually hooked to a machine, so they're not quite as mobile, but again, a little bit more mobile than actually an IABP. So when do we use indications for VAD therapy? Failure to wean from a cardiopulmonary bypass machine after surgery is a primary indicator for a ventricular assistive device. So their heart was not strong enough to come off or for them to survive coming off of the cardiopulmonary bypass machine. VADs are also used to support patients with ventricular failure caused by myocardial infarction and patients awaiting a heart transplantation. A VAD is a temporary device with the ability to partially or totally support circulation until the heart recovers or a donor heart is obtained. So people cannot live on these forever. Again, they are temporary. Cannula sites depend on the type of device used. For support of the right side of the heart, the right atrium and pulmonary artery are cannulated. The left ventricular apex can be cannulated for left VADs. Direct cannulation of the atria and great vessels occur in the operating room through a sternotomy. So this is not something they do at the bedside. It happens actually in the OR for the implantation of these. When we're caring for someone with a VAD, ventricular assistive device, it's very similar of that of the IABP. We need to observe the patient for bleeding, for cardiac tamponade, ventricular failure, infection, dysrhythmias, renal failure, hemolysis, or thromboembolism. So unlike the patient with the IABP, who must remain in bed with limited position change, the patient with the ventricular assistive device may be mobile and require an activity plan. In some cases, patient with VADs may go home. Preparation for discharge is complex and requires in-depth teaching about the device and support equipment, battery chargers, how it works, when to come back in. All of this is essential because if it quits, they technically, their heart is not strong enough to continue beating and they will die. So it's important they understand that. Patients must have a competent caregiver present at all times as well, who also has this training on the device. So our goal, ideally patients with circulatory assistive devices will recover through ventricular improvement, heart transplantation, or an artificial heart implantation. However, the sad part is many patients actually don't survive this or cannot wait it out long enough to get a heart, or the decision to terminate the device is made. Both the patient and the caregiver require emotional support, consult other members of the healthcare team, such as social work or clergy, as appropriate. It really takes a team care for the patients who are needing ventricular assistive device use. Briefly, let's talk about the audience response question at the end of this PowerPoint. The nurse is caring for a patient with a pulmonary artery catheter. If the pulmonary artery waveform is blunted, the nurse will suspect which problem. Can read through those a quick second. I'm not, again, going to ask you on the test any questions about waveforms, but the correct answer is B. The pressure tracing will be blunted if the catheter starts to be occluded. And that ends the podcast discussion of this PowerPoint. If you have any questions relating any of the information that was discussed, please do not hesitate to ask. Hope you have a great day.